This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tan Talk Radio Network studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida. The perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Check out my Facebook page. It's Radio Joy on Paper, and let me know if you have an author that you want me to invite. And while you're there, friend me and then follow me on Twitter. Well, I am so happy today to welcome to the program a really wonderful, cozy writer and award-winning author, Sherry Harris. Hi, Sherry. Are you there?
I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, Sherry, I just love your books. First of all, I love garage sales. And so Sarah Winston, the heroine of all your books is a garage sale organizer, and the stories are just wonderful.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad you like them.
Well, you know, of course, I have to tell all my listeners that you are an Agatha Award nominated author for best first novel, tagged for death. And of course, now you've written four of these Sarah Winston books, right?
Yes, I'm actually writing the seventh one right now.
Okay, good. So we can expect more, because I was going to say, the biggest problem with your books is there's not enough of them.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I thought it was just perfect, the choice of having, it's unusual to have a character who is a garage sale expert and organizer, and it just opens up so many possibilities, doesn't it?
It does. It gets her in a lot of people's houses that she wouldn't normally be in. And so she has a lot of opportunity to see into people's lives in a way lots of people don't.
And the book that I particularly really love is the fourth book. I think it's A Good Day to Buy.
Yes.
I think that's great. You know, when you talk about a first chapter, that first chapter just sets the tone so beautifully. And once you read that first chapter, you can't put this book down.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad you feel that way. I think every author wants to do that. They aren't always sure they achieve that, so that's great to hear.
Well, you achieve it with this book because, as I said, at one point in my life, I wanted to, I told my husband, I want to do that. I want to, you know, be a garage sale organizer. I could do that in my spare time, make some extra money. And then he just looked at me and said one word, books. And he knew that there's no way I would ever organize anybody, because I'd be stuck on their books, and I'd be reading and I'd be buying the books. So that he got that out of my head. But it is fun, and I love the way you introduce Sarah, and in this case it's Mr. and Mrs. Spencer who are having a garage sale, and how very well you write Mrs. Spencer. I mean, we can really see Mrs. Spencer suffering, having to give up downsize, which is always a terrible thing for a woman who likes to keep things.
Yes. All you need to do is look in my basement to know that's true.
Oh, I went through that 2 years ago when I moved from a house to a condo. And I cannot understand why I had so many foil pans, so many plastic containers from different restaurants. But I did, because they were nice plastic containers. And, you know, I hated to give them up.
Yes, I know. And I think a lot of us feel that way, because we always think, oh, I could use this for something. And so when I was developing Mrs. Spencer, I was thinking, what if it was somebody that doesn't want to give up their things, whether they have value or not, because they had value to her?
Well, I can tell you, the Waffle House, when they give you, you take your leftovers from Waffle House, they give you these wonderful containers. They are really, really great containers. And I have a very difficult time ever getting rid of them because, you know, I plan to use them. I actually never probably use them, but I've got a bunch of them.
That's funny.
Now, you, of course, you have had your share of garage sales in your life because your husband was in the Air Force and you traveled around a bit.
Yes. And I love going to garage sales. Most of our furniture in our house has come from a flea market or a garage sale. It's kind of amazing to me when I look around and think that.
Oh, but it's so much fun. I mean, it gives you such a feeling, a great feeling when you find something. Like I recently found a table for $10 at a garage sale. I mean, it's an absolutely gorgeous table, and I was so proud of myself.
Ooh, that does sound good. That's a good find. I also, they kind of bring back memories. You know, I'll think, oh, I got this when we lived in Ohio, and I bought this when I was with a friend at a flea market in Santa Cruz, California. And so they not only are functional, but they bring me joy and good memories.
Now, when did the first of the Sarah Winston books come out?
It came out in December of 2014.
And you're with Kensington, right?
Yes, I am.
Well, they're a wonderful publishing house.
They have been so fantastic to me. I think one of the nice things is they're a smaller family-owned company, and you just get a lot of great attention from them.
Well, I know one of their authors is Carol J. Perry, who's been on my program many times, and she's with Kensington, and you're right. They are really very supportive to their authors.
They are. I feel so lucky. I feel lucky to be published, and I'm especially glad that it is with Kensington.
Well, I think your books, now you're on the seventh one, and so we're waiting for the new ones to come out. They are just, because Sarah is a well-developed character, she has a fullness and her background is interesting, and her love life is interesting. So you're having fun with this, I think.
I am having fun with it. It's so interesting to see what happens in each book. I always hope she grows a little bit, figures out her life a little bit, because in the first one, you know, she's devastated by a divorce, and yet her ex-husband is still in her life. And so it's been interesting to see how their relationship kind of comes and goes throughout the books.
Now, when you started, did you plan a series? You knew that you were going to do a series, or was it going to be a one-off, or what?
When I started, I had a contract for 3 books. And after I wrote the first 3, they offered me 2 more, and then they offered me 2 more after that. So it's always, so the 3rd book, the 5th book, and the book I'm writing now, you always have to wrap up things, but leave a little question in case the series goes on.
Well, I have a feeling it's going to go on much like a Carolyn Hart series goes on and on and on. You know, when you finally come out with a character that is so relatable and all the characters around her, you have a winner.
Oh, thank you. I really like the other people that populate her world, too. Angelo DiNapoli, that runs the restaurant in town, is one of my favorites and is somewhat based on a neighbor of mine when we lived in Massachusetts, who was Italian and full of spit and vinegar and just, but had this lovely, lovely heart. And so it was really fun to use him as the basis for the character. And he enjoys it that I did that too.
And well, you're right. He's a wonderful character. And all of them, as I said, you write so very, it's solid and it's clear, so that when you describe a character, we really get to know them. As I said, just with the in the first chapter, very, very in very simple terms, you managed to capture Mr. and Mrs. Spence. And we really, in one chapter, we already knew about the Spencers and were intrigued with what their life was about. And, of course, it's very dramatic all the twists and turns that you have in this book, including that Sarah's long-lost brother shows up, which adds a new dimension. I always love a book that has, you know, several storylines, so that there's a lot of depth to it.
Oh, thank you. I really loved writing Luke and the relationship between Luke and Sarah. They have been apart basically for 20 years almost, with very little contact. And he shows up on one of the worst days of her life and tells her, "Don't tell anybody I'm in town, and especially not your ex-husband, the police chief." And it was very fun working through that relationship and trying to get them to a point where they could have a relationship again.
Well, I like that. I thought that was great to bring him in. I thought, as I said, it adds a depth and to her personality as well, you know?
Right. And people have asked me why she is estranged from her family, more or less. I mean, she does have contact with her parents, but they want her to move back to California, and she wants to stay in Massachusetts. And so it's been fun with each book growing that story a little bit more and letting us all figure out, myself included, why they have this relationship.
Yeah, I like that, sort of the slow reveal of a character over time. We learn a little bit more every book, and I really enjoy that.
Great. I'm so glad.
Now,
and I know you're from Florida, and Sarah's ex-husband grew up in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, and so he has that connection to your state.
Yes, and of course, this in the first chapter, the Spencers are downsizing because they plan to move to Florida. And
right.
So I always love those connections to Florida. You know, we just went through this horrible Irma hurricane.
Yes.
And we were very blessed that we did not have a great deal of damage in our area. And I was so happy that I heard that the Keys, they're opening up the Keys this weekend after, you know, being able to get the power back up there. So we were actually very lucky compared to the people in Houston who are still just devastated by all of the damage that was done.
Right. It's tragic. It's just tragic.
Now, you're involved with a lot of different, of course, you're a nonfiction writer, too. You blog?
I do. I blog with the Wicked Cozy Authors. There's six of us and then three accomplices that do monthly blogs. We just have so much fun. We talk about writing. We talk about books we're reading. We celebrate other authors' books. Carol has been a guest with us before, and Carol Perry.
Uh-huh.
And it's just been really fun. We had no idea what it was going to be like when we started 4.5 years ago, but it's been a great experience.
Well, it's lovely that you get to work together and support each other, because I've discovered one thing, especially with romance authors and cozy mystery authors, you're all very generous in, you know, supporting the other authors, and I like that.
I know. I think the crime fiction community as a whole is just really supportive of one another. I've had so many people reach out to me and say, "Do you want to be on this panel? Could I ask you this question?" And it's been my privilege to be at a point right now where other people help me and I get to help other writers. And it's just a joy.
Now, one of the things, of course, when you started writing, you went immediately into cozy fiction. My sister loves cozy fiction. She's like, we call her the connoisseur of cozy fiction, because she reads so many authors, and of course, you and Carol Perry and so many other you know, just brilliant writers of cozy fiction. And I'm so impressed always with the talent that, you know, sometimes people will say, well, cozy fiction might be easy. It's not easy because it is, you really have to come out, not just with the people and develop the characters, which is so important in any novel, but then you also have to have all these little hints and little twists and turns. So it's a challenging field.
It is. And I think sometimes that cozies get looked down on a little bit, but I feel like they are more complex than people think. And it is a challenge writing them because you have a person that's normally an amateur sleuth, and they have no skills but their own wits. And, you know, they don't have the CIA to help them out. They don't have somebody embedded someplace that's going to give them information. It's all on them to try to figure everything out.
Yeah, they don't have an Abby from...
right.
You know, they have to do it on their own. And I think you, with your writing, you really do bring in some... Always, there's always a nice little twist here and there and clues, but we just carry along. And it's so funny. When I was going through this storm, and, you know, we were without electricity for over a week.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Seven days, 3 hours and 22 minutes, to be precise.
Wow.
And of course, I discovered that I could not really read any new books. My mind was too, you know, confused. I was worrying about this, worrying about that. But I found that cozy mysteries are really cozy because I could pick up the ones that I've read before and just enjoy myself, just sort of get into the characters. And that's, you know, it was really very comforting. So cozy is comforting.
Right. They're kind of the comfort food of the book world, I think, because, you know, in the end, justice will prevail. I think that's one of the main, positive points. You're not going to have a terrible ending. Things might not always be the way they were in the beginning of the book, but justice prevails, and the world is set back to right. And I think we all wish we could do that in our own lives.
Exactly. That's why I think they are so much fun to read. And with the series, as I said, this, you know, the carry through of the characters and knowing that they actually become friends. I would know, I'd know Sarah Winston in a minute, you know, I could see myself sitting there and having coffee and Dunkin' Donut holes with her and really just enjoying being with her.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad I've been able to create a person that people like and they root for and they want her to be happy. I get a lot of fan mail about, is she going to be with Seth? Is she going to be with CJ? What's going to happen? Why people think she should be with one or the other. It's been really fascinating.
Well, it is. Isn't it wonderful when the fans take this interest in a character? And I think it's just wonderful.
It is. It's really a dream come true. When that first book comes out, you're so nervous. It's like putting your baby out there for everybody to see, and you don't want anybody to say, oh, that baby has a really big nose. So when you get positive feedback like that, it's a lot of fun.
And, of course, when you get nominated for an Agatha Award, which is, a great honor, and I have a feeling there are going to be many, many awards in your future because, as I said, my greatest compliment to a writer is always if I say it's solid, because that means I don't have to worry about plot holes. I don't have to worry about grammatical errors. I don't have to worry about, you know, things not being in sort of the right shape. Solid means it's good. I can just read it, enjoy it, and have fun with it. And that's why I think that you're going to be nominated for many awards. And I'm really eager for the next books to come out. So,
thank you.
You know, and as I said, it's wonderful. I love that you are also the type of, you know, author who does encourage other authors And that's part of, you know, you're part of the writing community. I know you're also with the Sisters in Crime. You work with the Sisters in Crime, right?
I do. I feel so lucky to be a part of such a great organization. I'm a member of two chapters. I belong to the New England chapter when we lived up there, and now that we live in Virginia, I belong to the Chesapeake chapter, and it's just been such a great experience. I've been the president of the Chesapeake chapter for the past 2 years and worked with so many great people. So, and I'm going to be joining the board of the national organization in October, so I'm really looking forward to that, too.
Well, that's fantastic. I want to tell all my listeners that the books are really great, and we have, I think, the most recent one, of course, was A Good Day to Buy, and then before that, we had All Murders Final. Oh, that was a good one. And The Longest Yard Sale. And, of course, your first one was Tagged for Death, which was nominated for the Agatha. And I want to – did you have a website that you want people to go to?
I'd love for them to stop by. My website is sherryharrisauthor.com. And I have some fun. I try to do some posts about things I've found at yard sales or things friends have found. And so I like to share some of that yard sale information on there, too.
Okay. Well, I love just that little advice about having tablecloths, tables with different color tablecloths, and putting the things according to the colors on the table. So that was a clever idea.
Oh, thank you.
So I have learned. But I never want another garage sale.
I don't blame you. They're a lot of work.
They are. Well, I want to thank you so much, Sherry, for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And I want to tell everyone, just check out Sherry's books. Go to her website. And, of course, they're available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and wherever books are sold. And thank you again, Sherry, for joining me.
Thank you so much, Patsy. It's really been a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, and let me know when your next book is out, because I want you on the show again, okay?
Okay, I sure will. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay, she's really nice. I love her books. Now, we're going to just take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to come back with another fabulous author.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back with one of my favorite authors. Well, he's an author who wears two hats, and I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper Reed Farrell Coleman, who has just come out with a new Robert B. Parker book called The Hangman's Sonnet. Hi, Reed. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, great. Well, it's so wonderful to be able to talk to you. I had to cancel out on you during the storm because we had this hurricane come through here and Irma got in our way, but I am so glad that you were able to make it today.
I'm happy to be here. And yes, I was in Florida last week in Houston as well, so I've seen what the storms did.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we really went through it. Of course, Houston was worse, but you did manage to get down. I know that you are on your book tour, and so you managed to get down here, which was good. How are you doing with this tour? You enjoying it?
Well, you know, touring is an interesting thing. When you first start out, you think, my God, how glorious and glamorous. And once you've done it a few times, it just seems like a grind. But the best part is always going to the bookstore and meeting people who read the books.
That's
so that
it.
That part is always great and always fun.
And I know the fans just love your books. Of course, everyone who has listened to this show has, you were actually on a year ago because we were talking about Robert B. Parker's book. And at that time, you know, it was interesting. And you told us how you have to, you know, shift from character, from one mindset to the other when you're working on Parker's books. And this new book, The Hangman's Sonnet, I want to tell you something. It was really funny. As I'm reading this book, and I'm into it a few pages, and I'm reading it, I felt something almost different here. It was like there was a sort of a fresh breeze going through paradise. And this whole, you know, of course, everybody who knows, you know, the story of Jesse Stone, of course, people are familiar with the books and with the television series. But I felt that when I was reading this book, there was almost like something special happened to you when you were writing this book.
You know, that's always interesting. It's always interesting to hear what readers perceive from what you write. Because as a writer, of course, it's my job. I sit down every day and I write what I do. Some days I'm very inspired and some days I'm not, but it's my job. In fact, I was just working on the 2019 Jesse Stone book when you called. So although I'm not conscious of what's going on in terms of whether it's fresh or not, because I'm only doing my job, I always find it fascinating when readers find something new or fresh in it.
Well, of course, this is
I'm not aware of it.
This is the fourth book, and ever since you took over, you know, Parker's series, and you know, of course, everybody knows that he was a brilliant author, and you know, it was almost impossible at one point to think that anyone could take over for him and that anyone could carry on Jesse Stone and do it credit. But you, right from the get-go, your first, you know, book out of the series was, you were able to capture Jesse. But somehow in this book, I felt like, wow, you really had, you know, in the last book, of course, Jesse went through really hell.
Right.
And in this book, it was like, although we know he's suffering, there was like almost a, as I said, a fresh approach to it. And I was really intrigued by the premise. First of all, tell us a little bit about the premise, because it is really a great story.
Well, one of my favorite things about being a fiction writer is I get to lie. I get to make stuff up. And in this book, I kind of gave myself license to really let go, to really have fun with the series. Because, you know, three books in, four books in, I'm now more comfortable doing the series. Of course, in the first few, you want to be careful. You don't want to try and be too wildly different than Bob Parker. And I'm still not wildly different, but the idea in this book is that the central premise of the book is there's a Bob Dylan-like character who's been in seclusion for 40 years. What drove him into seclusion? He had written a great song cycle inspired by a sonnet he had found that was written in 1882 by a man who was about to be hanged. And that poem is the Hangman's Sonnet. So he had written a whole album around this poem and enlisted some of the greatest rock musicians of the 60s and 70s to record it live in one take at a small recording studio in Cape Cod, and the tape disappears. So that drives the character, Terry Jester, into seclusion, and that's one of the central themes of the book. Whatever happened to the Hangman's Sonnet? And what's great is this case has been going on for 40 years, so even this Boston PI, this gentleman people may have heard of, Spencer, worked on the case too. So, yes, folks, Spencer gets to make an appearance in this book.
That was one of the great things about this book. Everybody loves when Spencer, you know, there's a little bit about Spencer.
Yes, well, Spencer's a boss. Spencer is Bob Parker's most famous protagonist. He's a Boston PI who has a great wife and was a former boxer and has had several sidekicks, Hawk and Six Kill. He is just like, in the tradition of Philip Marlowe, a great American PI. And he is, I think there are 40 or more Spencer books, some written by Parker, and most recently by my pal Ace Atkins, who does an amazing job at it. And so I thought it would be fun. Again, I let myself go a little, and I let, you know, have an appearance by Spencer in the book.
Well, maybe that's why I felt it was so fresh. And I at one point, like, I think I was like on page 5 or 6, and I sort of sat back in my chair and said, wow, he's really flying with this. I thought it was just a feeling, you know, of, in a way, sort of freedom that you were now able, maybe like the ghost of Bob, you know, just sort of floated by you and just, whoa,
yes,
set
maybe
you free.
Maybe when I was sleeping, his ghost gave me permission to let go a little bit. So.
Well, it comes through, and you feel that this is the development that he would have happened to him if he had, you know, continued on. Because
that's a very lovely thing to say. And I guess readers agree with you because the book is number 14 on the bestseller list this coming week. So
well, I think so, because as I said, there is this feeling that, I mean, we all know that if Bob had lived, he would have, you know, changed along the way. There would have been changes to his writing. And in order to keep it fresh, he would have made his own adjustments, and you have done it, I think, just beautifully.
Well, thank you, and I agree. I think, you know, people, some of Bob's fans have gotten upset with me, but, you know, I understand that. You know, I'm not Bob Parker, and I, you know, no one could replace Bob, but I think people love the character of Jesse and Molly and Suit. They love those characters, so. You know, while on the one hand, some are disappointed, you know, that I don't try to copy Bob, I think most of his fans are happy that those characters are still around, and I've breathed some different life into them.
Exactly. And, I mean, like with Tamara, I think this is a wonderful character.
Well, thank you. I like her, too. And she's also, and my wife likes her because she looks like my wife.
Well, I think she's a great character. And I, as I said, with this sort of fresh approach that we so want something good to happen to Jesse. And he's gone through so much over the books. And I think you've done a beautiful job with this.
Well, thank you very much. I you should call me more often. I feel very good about myself when you.
Well, you know, you are a marvelous writer. And last time we spoke, we were talking about, of course, your Gus Murphy, your first Gus Murphy novel, Where It Hurts, which I think is fantastic.
Well, you know, that book received 5 major writing award nominations. So, and it won one. I won the Seamus Award last week. So your assessment of that book seems to agree with the judges.
Well, the minute I read it, I said, oh, boy, I like Gus. I know that we're going to have more of the Gus Murphy books because, again, you have, you know, a character who is well developed and very interesting. And so you're working on a new Gus book, too, I assume.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
For right now, I'm working on 2 things. One is the 2019 Jesse book. And I don't know if you know this, but I was hired by the film director, Michael Mann, to write a prequel novel to his magnum opus movie, Heat. So I'm working on both of those projects.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. Oh, that's nice. Like breaking news here. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow. That should be a fascinating
thing. Maybe we'll talk when I get that done.
Absolutely. You know, I think I like that when some of these series are being carried on even after, you know, someone passes away, because we do love these characters so much, and we do want to know more about them.
Well, you know, I'll never forget something that Lee Child said to me. He didn't say it to me, he said it to an audience, but it stuck with me. He said, when readers don't go into a bookstore and ask for the new Lee Child book, they go into a store and they ask for the new Jack Reacher book. It's the character they love. You know, it's not the author that they love. Of course, you need the author to produce it, but the readers really care about the characters. So if people love the characters and you get the, you know, I'm honored to perpetuate Jesse. I know Ace feels the same way about Spencer. Robert Knott feels the same way about Colin Hitch. You know, it's an honor for us to do this, because we get to keep really beloved characters alive.
And, of course, in the case of Bob Parker, he gave so much of Jesse for you to work with. I mean, there was so much behind Jesse that it is something that you can draw upon, all of his work on that.
Yeah, so, and you know what else he did? He did me a great service, in that he left space for me to go. I'm not sure your listeners will get this, but it's much harder for Ace to do his job because there are 40 books in Spencer series, and so there's less room for Ace to move. I have room. You know, Bob only wrote 9 books. Michael Brandman wrote 3 books in the series. I've written 4. So there's still space. There's still things to be known and learned about the characters and the setting, you know. So Bob did me a great service. He gave me a great character and room to develop the character and the town and introduce other characters. That was really good of him.
Now, when you write one of these books, do the who's Bob Parker's wife is still alive?
The estate. His children.
Uh-huh.
Because his wife passed away in 2013.
Okay. So I think it must be pretty thrilling for them, though, to know that their father's character lives on.
Yeah. So far, they must be pleased, because they've signed me to a few contracts, and they've never objected to anything I've written. So that's always a good sign.
Exactly. Well, I as I said, I think you've captured Jesse Stone, and I think you've captured him with this wonderful, fresh look that I believe that Parker himself would approve of.
Well, I'm glad you think that. I'd like to think it too.
Now, so. when you're thinking about your characters and what's going to happen, you know, 50 years down the line, are you thinking that you want your characters carried on?
Well, you know what? I've taken that out of my own hands, actually, and like Bob, I've left that up to my wife and children. So if and when I pass, it will be up to them, you know, to them to decide if they want the characters to live on. I don't have any objection to it. If it makes them some money and the characters get to live on, then I'm fine with it. I won't be around to care about it. So,
but you know, how do you write? You write in Word. What do you write with?
I use Word. I used to love WordPerfect, actually.
Oh, so did I.
I have to confess that I much preferred WordPerfect, but that, you know, Word is kind of the industry standard. So I use Word. I'm used to it. And someone, my friend Mitch, always says to me that I use a computer like a fancy word processor anyway. You know, so Word is fine. I'm used to it now, and that's just what I use.
Now, do you save your drafts of your book? Like when you write a book and the first draft, do you save that?
Well, I'll tell you what. Now this is going to come off to your listeners kind of snobby, but I usually only write one draft of my books. But here's the truth. The truth is I'm a fierce editor as I write. So I don't just get it all out. I don't spew it all out and then go back and edit it. I edit fiercely as I write it. So there are hundreds of drafts within the one draft. You know, I change every day when I start. Well, I'm telling you, I'm up to page 15 in the new Jesse, in the 2019 Jesse book, and I have reread every one of those pages five or six times already, and changed them. So it would be impossible for me to actually keep all the drafts of my books.
Well, I think the future historians are going to be really depressed with Word, because this is one of the problems, you know, in the old days when people, you know, wrote on a typewriter and they had the hard copy and then they did the corrections in the margins, and we have all of this wonderful stuff that is kept in archives. You know, you can go in and see the F. Scott Fitzgerald archives, and you have his notes by hand that he wrote in the margins, or the same, I think, with Hemingway. And that's one of the problems of the future generations of researchers, because everything comes out, you know, as you said,
yeah,
you edit.
They won't get to see the progress.
Yeah, they can't see the development of the writing.
Yes, we all look like Mozart now, as if it all comes out perfectly in one draft. But the fact is, I change. Almost every time I sit down to write, I tweak all the stuff that came before it. It's just the way I've always wrote. It probably comes from my poetry training, because I never took a fiction writing class. The only writing classes I ever took were poetry writing classes, because I started as a poet. And the fact is that poets are constant tinkerers. So although I usually have one finished draft, you know, to present to my publisher, it's been tinkered and tweaked and toyed with. Every page of it has been tinkered and tweaked and toyed with since the day I started.
So 100 years from now, no student, student will be able to do a PhD thesis on the development of your writing, because they won't be able to see it.
Well, they will be able to see it since I've done 27 books and hope to do many more. They'll be able to see progress from book to book to book. They just won't be able to see as like with Raymond Chandler, whose notes and manuscripts are in the library at Oxford, where you can actually see his daily pages. Nope, you won't be able to see my daily pages, but I'm not so egotistical to believe that anybody will be studying my writing 100 years from now.
Oh, yes, they will. They will. First of all, PhD students need something to write a thesis about, so believe me, somebody, yeah. Quite a few somebodies will pick you.
That's lovely of you to say.
Thank you. It's because you're a really great writer, and I see the development in you just from these four books and also from your other books. I see the development, and that's one of the fun things for me, because I read a lot, like
I hope so
all the time, and it's so funny that I do notice when somebody is developing as a writer. And I do notice, like, when I, as I said, the minute I read Where It Hurts, I mean, I knew this was an award winner. I immediately said, this book's going to win awards, and it's going to be a series because he's written a great character.
Yes, well, to me, that's what it takes, a great character. The bottom line is, you can have the best plot in the world. If you don't have a great character, the rest of it kind of falls by the wayside.
Exactly. So. Now, one of the things that happened with this hurricane is I didn't evacuate. Thank goodness I'm high enough off, I live on the water, but I'm high enough off the water that I didn't have to worry about evacuating. But I do have two walls of windows, and I have like 1,000 books in my living room. And I was really worried about the windows breaking.
Yeah.
And,
it was
terrible.
Irreplaceable.
So I had to move a lot of my books out. But then for people who went on, evacuated, I was wondering, I've been asking everybody, what books did you take? What did you take with you? Did you have some valuable books that you just had to take with you? What about you? If you, on Long Island there, you might have to one day get up and get out.
Only when if the sea rises a few more inches, maybe. But I don't live close enough to either shore to worry too much about it. I don't know what books I would take because I know I would take my computer because for me the books that count are the books that I'm working on, and any books I have. I mean, I have a few signed books that mean a lot to me. But you can always replace books, but you can't replace people. I've always cared less about things than about people. So I don't worry too much about things. Although I have a lot of books, I've never been a collector per se. So I'm not a collector. And that's an interesting question. I don't think I thought about that much. Maybe now I'll have to think about it.
Probably. Well, there was one book that I grabbed, first, that I said I could not lose this, and it's an old book, and it's called Elizabeth and Her Secret Garden. And nobody's read this book in 130 years, but and you couldn't find it anywhere, and there was limited number of books printed. But the thought of losing that book just was overwhelming to me, and so I actually moved out about 400 books out of the living room because I was worried.
Well, you've moved books around, you don't realize how much work it is. Books are heavy.
Oh, that's unbelievable. It was a task, and now I'm in the process of having to move them back. Well, I want to thank you so much. I'm so glad that we finally could connect and that you could be on the program. Because I think the new book is wonderful and everybody can get it. It's available on Amazon. It just came out. And it's called The Hangman's Sonnet. Robert B. Parker's The Hangman's Sonnet. And it's by Reed Farrell Coleman. And Reed, I think you are a fantastic author. And I look forward to having you back on the program. Whenever you have a new book coming out, you just let me know, and you'll be on the program because I want people to read you and enjoy your books. And I will put in a plug again for Where It Hurts, because I think that it's a wonderful book.
Patsy, thank you very much. It's always great to talk to you, and I'm glad most of your listeners got through the storm without too much damage.
Exactly. Okay, well, again, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again soon, okay?
All right. Hey, you take care, Patsy.
Okay,
bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye now. Wow. Oh, he's nice. I like him. And as I said, this new book, this if you are into Jesse Stone and you're watching the TV series, I think this new book is just, it's riveting. I couldn't put it down. And you will really, he really captures. And as you're reading the book, you do see the Jesse Stone, that you see on TV. And it's just, there's something about this particular book of all of the books that I just think is wonderful. And you will enjoy it. So, and it's a fascinating mystery. What happened? Wouldn't it be fun to know what happened to this album called The Hangman's Sonnet with all of the great rock and roll stars who recorded it? So that's the mystery of the book, and it is a fun read. So I want to thank both of my guests today because, I had put Reed off, and I had also had to put, I put off a few people because we got all confused here with this storm, but I'm happy that we are back and all getting organized. Now, everybody, just remember that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen or in an audible book. And audible books are wonderful during if you have to ever evacuate or if you have to be without electricity, because you can still listen to your audible books and they are wonderful. So set some time aside and start writing, and you'll be proud of yourself, whether it's a memoir or a nonfiction book or a really fantastic outer space sci-fi book. Whatever gets you going, write it, and you'll be proud of yourself. And meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. And I want to thank Big Ed in the control room there. He has been so wonderful to me. I've been driving him crazy during this storm with our ups and downs, and he's been so good. He put my sign out today, and I just want to tell everyone, say something nice to somebody today. And as I said, I'm saying something nice to Big Ed. Thank you, Ed. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him because he is just wonderful. So, bye-bye for now.